Special thanks to Tony Buck.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor live performances by Tony Furtado on Friday and Saturday, November 23rd and 24th at 8 p.m. at Mississippi Studios in Portland. Tony Furtado is a Portland songwriter in the Americana bluegrass realm. This is his 8th annual Thanksgiving Bash at Mississippi Studios. On November 23rd, he's playing a seated acoustic show with guest collaborator Scott Law, with Jack Straw opening. On November 24th, he'll be playing an electric set with guest collaborator Stephanie Schneiderman. Richie S. Young opens the show. Again, that's live performances by Tony Furtado on Friday and Saturday, November 23rd and 24th at 8 p.m. at Mississippi Studios, 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 11:30, and coming up next on Art Focus, they interview Julia Dolan about the photography show Memory Unearthed at the Portland Art Museum.
I'm Amanda Clem, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO 90.7 FM. Our guest today is Dr. Julia Dolan, the Minor White Curator of Photography at the Portland Art Museum, and we'll be talking about the joint exhibitions Memory Unearthed, The Loge Ghetto Photographs of Henrik Ross at the Portland Art Museum, and at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education, the exhibition The Last Journey of the Jews of Loge, both on view now through February 24th, 2019. In partnership for the first time, Portland Art Museum and the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education are presenting these exhibitions, which offer an extraordinarily rare glimpse into the life of the Loge Ghetto in Poland, through the lens of Polish-Jewish photojournalist Henrik Ross, who passed away in 1991. So thank you, Julia. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. It's really great to have you talk about this very timely exhibition.
I really appreciate the invitation, and unfortunately, it remains a timely exhibition.
Yes, I think listeners should know that the show opened on October 27th at the Portland Art Museum, which is the same day as the tragic mass murder at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. And that just couldn't have been more upsetting, I would imagine.
It was very painful for everyone in the community, certainly, and I found it devastating, certainly. And we had multiple opening events that Sunday, the day after. In some ways, it was wonderful to be together with others dealing with the sadness and the pain, but it was a very poignant reminder of the work that still needs to be done in our world to fight hatred and racism.
Well, were the opening events, you know, did you expect to see a big crowd or a smaller crowd?
It's interesting. We had a private opening at the museum for the donors to the exhibition. This exhibition came from the Art Gallery of Ontario. It's part of their collection. So transportation, insurance, all of those things are not inexpensive.
Yeah.
And so we had many people within the community donating to make sure that these joint exhibitions could happen. So we had a small lunch and then a viewing for them. And what was wonderful for me to see was that it was during regular museum hours. So the day after this massacre in Pittsburgh, many people who were not part of that group were looking at the photographs, and a number of people with their families, so younger children in the space as well. It's difficult material, but I really appreciate people being willing to take themselves in and also consider bringing their children in to once again learn these lessons that we need to continue to remind ourselves of.
Yeah.
The second opening that happened that afternoon at the Oregon Jewish Museum was standing room only.
Yeah.
And that was very touching.
Yeah. This is solidarity and an exhibition that really reinforces the power of art and photography to grapple with such terrible, terrible themes in the world.
Absolutely. And to bear witness. Camera as a function of bearing witness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then logistically, exhibitions take so long to produce. And so this exhibition came from Ontario, Canada. Can you talk a little bit about how they came to receive the negatives, and then how the partnership look and how that began here in Portland?
Definitely. The 6,000 plus negatives that Henrik Ross had produced during his time in the ghetto, about 3,000 of them survived the end of the war, and then a number of documents that he was able to keep and bury along with the negatives in 1944. Mm-hmm. They eventually made their way to a private collection, and the name of that collection is the Archive of Modern Conflict. Mm-hmm. It's not all conflict photography, but it is a massive archive of the history of photography. Mm-hmm. Little nooks and crannies of the history of photography that other institutions often don't bring into their collections. So that individual donated Henrik Ross's archive to the Art Gallery of Ontario in Toronto. And from there, Maya Sutnick, who is now a curator emerita there, she, and works on special projects, she curated the exhibition, and it was first at the Art Gallery of Ontario. It was also shown at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, and most recently was at the Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York City. And Judy Margles, who is the executive director of the Oregon Jewish Museum, called my attention to it. I knew about the exhibition, but she wanted to bring it here, mm-hmm. and asked if we could work together on it. And this was last year, and I said, I would love to work with you on it. We can make it happen if we can find the funds.
And then that all came together then in the span of a year. The two organizations, two museums, I mean, honestly, I am impressed that it all came together within the year, because that's a tremendous collaborative effort. And so I have a question then about, as a curator and constantly doing research about photography, how do the current events shape your research and your exhibitions that you're putting forth? Because you have photographs to work with within your collection at the Portland Art Museum, and then you're able to go outside and work with other organizations. So are you, in your curatorial practice, is this something that's really important to you?
It's incredibly important to be bringing in photographs that reflect our current world or aspects of our current world if they've been produced in the past. Mm-hmm. And I'm noticing in my own curatorial practice over the past few years that I'm becoming increasingly insistent upon showing imagery that relates to us specifically. Life is very, very difficult for many people for various reasons, whether it's religion, skin color, gender, mm-hmm. identification. Mm-hmm. And so how can we, as a space that invites people in, grapple with these issues in a way that allows people to slow down? I think that's something that's really wonderful about museums. We as human beings walking around, we are bombarded with photographs.
Every day, all the
time. We wake up until the time we turn off our phones at night. If we wake up in the middle of the night, we're looking at images. And we are being pushed to consume messages through these images. And a lot of times we're not even quite paying attention to what those messages are. The museum gives us a space to slow down, pay closer attention, and then hopefully apply that slower looking and thinking to the photographs that we're bombarded with during the rest of our time, mm-hmm. the day. And it's very important for me at this moment to make sure that we are thinking about issues that are critical to every aspect of our lives. Mm-hmm. So that was another reason why I was really encouraged to and welcoming of these photographs, bringing them in.
Yeah, that's excellent. Museums just as a space for community to be gathering and to be enriched and to slow down. Like when you are entering the show at the Portland Art Museum, I mean, the photography gallery is in general much darker than the rest of the museum for obvious reasons, to protect the work and just make it a little easier to view a lot of the time too. But in this exhibition, it is definitely adds a somber layer over the installation. And so when you walk into the show, you first see this grid of 100 photographs, and those are all taken in 1940, I believe, before Henrik was forbidden from taking photographs freely within the ghetto. And I thought that was a really beautiful way to start the show. And actually, let's talk about, too, the title of the exhibition. You touched on this a little bit earlier. The title of the exhibition, Memory Unearthed, is very literal, right? So Henrik, at the end of his time at the ghetto, buried his negatives.
He did. Ludge Ghetto is such a complex space in which over 200,000 people were moved through. Some stayed for years, others just for a few days before they were moved off to be murdered or moved off to concentration camps. And Henrik was there really from the beginning to the end because he was living in Ludge and Jewish when the Ludge Ghetto was marked out by the Nazis and the Jews were pushed into it. But he also remained till the end and was one of about 1,000 Ludge Ghetto residents who were forced to liquidate and clean up as the Nazis moved everyone else out to concentration or death camps. He was one of the small team that needed to clean up. He expected to die.
Yeah.
And so he decided to bury in the ground his negatives, some of the prints that were made during his time in the ghetto, in order that the record of their existence and what they suffered through would remain.
Yeah.
The miracle of him surviving the ghetto at all and then being able to return 2 months after the ghetto was liberated, the Russian army, to dig up the box.
That's
is
astounding.
It's another miracle.
Yeah.
It's incredible that he is able to retrieve his documentation and then bring it forward into the world.
Yeah. That's amazing. Actually, I did notice throughout the exhibition, many of the prints are modern prints made from the original negatives, and you can see a lot of the how they've degraded over the years throughout with whatever elements they were exposed to being buried in Poland.
Polish winter.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
And so that's where about half of the 6,000 negatives were destroyed because of leakage into the box that was buried. But I think that's really important to see on the modern prints that the Art Gallery of Ontario produced, that deterioration, because there's a real physical connection to the earth.
Yes.
That was the Ludge Ghetto.
Yes.
That was the place where over 200,000 people were incarcerated and starving to death, dying from disease and being worked to death.
Yeah.
There's a real physical connection there.
Really, an indelible mark on that.
Yes.
Yeah. And but I'm impressed that actually some of those silver gelatin prints were made in that time. That was something I was had a question about when I was going through the show.
Yes.
And that is impressive that they survived.
It is amazing to me. And one of the most striking objects in the exhibition is Henrik's own identification card.
Yes.
From the Ludge Ghetto, which had been renamed Lichtenstadt, because the Germans, as they conquered different spaces, would rename for German heroes, if you will. And so his ghetto identification card still exists, and the fact that it has moved through history, through time, and through space to come to us here in Portland to indicate his status as someone who is being held against his will in his own city.
In his own city.
For the only, the only reason is because of his faith of being a Jew, it carries so much weight for me.
Yeah.
But there are many other, what we call vintage prints. So they were photographs printed at the time of the negatives making or soon thereafter. Mm-hmm. So there are some photographs that he was able to produce in the ghetto.
Yeah.
There were a couple of other photographers working with him at that time. He is the one who survived, it seems. But you will see pieces of paper, objects that come directly to us from 1940s in the ghetto.
Wow. Yeah. The identification that's on exhibition, that kind of leads me into maybe we can talk about what Henrik did for the ghetto and the administration that was run there. So the Nazis formed a Jewish council within the ghetto that were, forced to enforce their regime.
Yeah.
And that I know we're learning from the exhibition, too, was the leader of that council is a really controversial figure, and he shows up a lot in the exhibition because Henrik was the official photographer. And so he was tasked with taking photo identification for all the residents and was able to have a camera, legally on him. So we see documentation of them all. You know, he was very efficient about his how he was managing that task, with a really, for me, seemed just an interesting foresight into his own life. And he, Henrik, seemed to be looking really intensely at his own future and like the legacy of the photographs that he was leaving. So it was really interesting to me to see that the photographs that he was taking on behalf of the council, on behalf of the Nazi regime, as propaganda photos, and they're mixed in with these photographs of his, you know, they're the photographs of the people smiling when you first walk into the gallery, and they're this very normal life.
One of the most diabolical systems that the Nazis put in place in many ghettos, and every ghetto is different, but in the Ludge ghetto, this Jewish council was the enforcement mechanism within the space. So the Nazis, for the most part, didn't do the enforcing. Mm-hmm. They did the overarching enforcing. So prisoners were enforcing their own people. Mm-hmm. And Chaim Rumkowski is the main figure, the elder of the Jews within this space. And his face would end up on postage stamps and in these very strange shrines almost, and you can see these shrines in workshops in the photographs that Henrik took.
Yeah.
So he was a Jewish leader, but he was still implementing the ways in which people were working, being forced to work, how much food they would get. People who would be deported, he would help select those people. Mm-hmm. When people had to turn in their jewelry, their furs, their goods that would eventually go to the Nazis, he had to make the proclamations to do that. Diabolical that the Nazis had these puppets do that dirty work for most of the residents within that space. And Henrik, because he was a photographer, his skills were used to make photographs for the statistics department. Mm-hmm. But he knew that things would not go particularly well for long somehow.
Yeah.
And so instead of making one image for an ID, one ID card per 35 millimeter exposure, he would set people up so he would maybe have 12 people mm-hmm. within one 35 millimeter exposure, which would allow him to hoard film.
Yeah.
So he could take photographs of over 100 people on one roll of 36 exposures rather than 36 photographs of 36 people.
Right.
So that would allow him to surreptitiously take photographs of things that the Nazis and the Jewish council did not want him to take photographs of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A lot of foresight there.
Yeah, it's, I'm constantly like in awe of that. And then the interviews, there's some videos at both the Portland Art Museum and the Oregon Jewish Museum that are interviews with Henrik and his wife, who also his assistant accomplice in many of these photo risky adventures that they were going on to photograph these atrocities.
Yes.
And so the duality of the photography that he's making, on one hand, is propaganda for the Nazis. And on the other hand, it's their very sly images, especially towards the end of the movements within the ghetto, within the starvation, the kids on the street, I mean, everybody on the street, the starvation rampant. There's photos. There's one in particular that stands out to me of, it's a street scene, and there are a few people in it, but there's one man with his arm out, and it's just this gaunt, super, super gaunt arm just reaching out. So photography is a really interesting form of art in this way, that you can have this, the two sides of this experience portrayed, you know, honestly in a way, and in that they're photos that are taken and they're really happening. And the story then that he's able to actually provide us really changes everything about our understanding of what happened there. And so can you talk a little bit about that, going through the photographs and sequencing them and kind of putting those two things against each other, next to each other, and how really the daily life in the ghetto was
deep-rooted understanding of centering the human being within the space of the workshop, mm-hmm. and dignifying the human being as the truly only reason that goods are being made. Mm. The machines will not work without the human being. Stitches will not be sewn without the human being.
Yeah.
So there are beautiful photographs both in the mattress factory section and then the leather factory section that are very much about elevating the worker. And it makes me think about Lewis Hine and the photographs of people who are arriving at Ellis Island at the turn of the 20th century, and then also his look at the machine age and how critical the human being is to the work being done within the machine age. You see many echoes of that in these beautiful photographs that Henrik has made under incredible duress.
Yeah.
And we also see them full frame. These are photographs that he did not produce for the most part within the ghetto, so they are modern prints. We see no cropping.
Mm-mm.
He has beautifully composed them. He uses whatever available light there is within the workshops, and the individuals are very clearly respected mm-hmm. by Henrik.
Yeah. I mean, that comes across too in the exhibition then as a viewer, and the exhibition is a form of remembrance and reverence. That is something that you really do walk away with, maybe not fully understanding that it's because the angle was from slightly below and it elevates the subject slightly in our minds. Subconsciously, we understand that. And it's interesting and really wonderful to be able to use words to describe what we're seeing and how the picture is made and the context in under which the picture was taken in this exhibition in particular is everything. It's wonderful.
I'd love for people to be sure to know that if someone is a member of the Portland Art Museum, we have reciprocal entry at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education, so that you can see the different exhibition of Henrik Russ's work yeah. in their space, and vice versa. If you are a member of the Oregon Jewish Museum, bring your Oregon Jewish Museum membership card to the Portland Art Museum, and you will be able to enter the museum to see our exhibition. So we are very grateful to have the overlap between yeah. our memberships, and to be working together has been incredibly special.
That's
I have learned so much from everyone at the Oregon Jewish Museum, and it's been a very rich and wonderful collaboration.
Yeah. That's tremendous. I'm really glad to hear about the reciprocal membership. That's really great. And definitely an exhibition that you could do this all in one day. I think it would be a heavy day. But
it would be a heavy day.
You know,
there's time for reflection and a lunch break, a coffee
exactly,
break
yeah.
between the two locations. Time to think about, talk about, and have a look at both. And I'm very grateful to people for being willing to sit with this work and spend time with it and acknowledge how difficult it is, but then still be willing to bear witness.
Mm-hmm. Is there any programming that's happening that we should highlight?
We have quite a bit of programming. The best way to look at most of it would be to go to the Oregon Jewish Museum's website or our website as well, the Portland Art Museum's website, because I don't want to give you any wrong dates or information on the air.
I can look
but
that.
I am in particular looking forward to a number of events in early February. We will be doing multiple screenings of films, including a film by Esther Podemski, who used to live here in Portland and is someone who has very deep family connections to the Ludge Ghetto. And she has a film called House of the World that is about Ludge and the aftermath of World War II there. And then we will also have a wonderful speaker, Judith Cohen, from the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. She will be joining us to talk about what it means to be someone to photograph within the space of a ghetto or a concentration camp versus someone who's photographing from outside. Like, how does bearing witness differ depending on where you are with the camera and what you are actually experiencing. And she will be joining us in early February as well. So
okay, great.
Be on the lookout for those programs.
Stay tuned for those dates, definitely. And I know, too, that the Oregon Jewish Museums and the Portland Art Museum's docents are, you know, well-versed and they're really ready to talk with the public about these shows. So this is an encouraging word to say, talk with your docent. If you have a question, if you, you know, just, it's really informative. It can be really enriching.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we are also encouraging our docents to say they don't know if they don't know.
Yeah.
These are very difficult issues
yeah.
to grapple with, and there is a long, difficult, complex history
right.
that surrounds this work. And so sometimes we don't have the answers,
yeah.
but we welcome the question.
Thank you so much, Julia. It was really wonderful to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much for the invitation, and I hope that many listeners will be able to visit both exhibitions.
Yes. Memory Unearthed, the Loge Ghetto Photographs of Henrik Ross at the Portland Art Museum, and The Last Journey of the Jews of Loge at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education are both on view now through February 24, 2019. For more information, visit the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education online at ojmche.org and the Portland Art Museum at portlandartmuseum.org. You've been listening to a conversation with Julia Dolan, the curator of photography at the Portland Art Museum, and me, Amanda Clem, your host today for Art Focus on KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is in this year's Willamette Week Gift Guide. The gift guide highlights 150 local nonprofits, including us. Give to KBOO in Give Guide today and help us highlight the impact community radio has throughout the Willamette Valley. You can also get Chinook book discounts and free items in your email inbox immediately following your gift, along with your donation receipt. Every donation comes with coupons good for free cups of coffee, pastries, and more, and every gift is welcome. And the Give Guide processes amounts starting at $10 online through an easy-to-use, secure platform. The Give Guide is an easy, secure way to make a gift to KBOO, so go to kboo.fm/give.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a development director. This 32-hour-a-week position develops and implements the yearly fundraising plan, develops promotional and press materials, and supports the anti-oppression work of KBOO. Send a cover letter and resume to Delphine Crescenzo at del@kboo.org or send to KBOO Development Hire, 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon 97214. Please answer in the cover letter the question, why is KBOO important? Deadline to apply is Sunday, November 25th at midnight. More information on the development director position is available at kboo.fm/developmenthire2018.
Así que vamos a delirar, deliremos por un ratito.
Thank you. justicia. Hoy marchamos por la libertad. Hoy marchamos por la democracia.
Muy buenas tardes, bienvenidas y bienvenidos a la programación en español que se transmite por la radio comunitaria de KBOO. Esto es Buscando América por las ondas radiales del 90.7 FM en Portland, el 104.3 en Corvallis y el 91.9 en Hood River. Saludos también a las y los que nos escuchan por KBOO.FM en cualquier parte del mundo. Yo soy Tania Gómez Daza y como cada martes de radio, les doy la bienvenida. Esto es Buscando América hasta la 1:30 de la tarde. Los invitamos a que se queden con nosotros. No le cambien. Esto es Buscando América y esto es KBOO. Comenzamos.
Creciendo